So everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, and today we have a very special episode for you with one of my personal friends from the industry, Hans Durr, who is now the head of esports for FC Schalke. Hans is one of my favourite people in the industry. We've met multiple times at quite a few events, and I just think his perspective on how you build up a team and just his approach to the industry is one of the best in Europe. So Hans, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hello, thanks so much for having me, and thank you for the really, really kind introduction.
Cool. So Hans, just before we get into how FC Schalke has played out and your approach to building the team there, it'd be great if you could just take us through your story of how you got to where you are now and your history in esports.
So I think it started way, way back when I was really, really young. I think I was 13 in 1996. I was introduced to the back then banned in Germany game Quake, Quake 1. And I was playing it with some friends, and got me really excited. So I had a really, really bad PC, so it looked way, way worse than Minecraft. And we didn't play it because it was so violent and graphic, but we really played it because it provided a good opportunity to play first-person shooter together in a competitive environment. And I had three really close friends of mine. One of them had four PCs in his living room. I still don't understand why to that day. And we started playing the game and had quite a tremendous amount of fun. And it basically all started from there. Back then we decided, okay, why don't we just found a team? Where you're young and silly. And we started the first LAN parties and the first smaller tournaments. And suddenly the internet became a bit more affordable in Germany. And Quake 2 was already released. And we started to look more into the online league structure. Back then there was like the German Clan League, DECL, it was called. That was way before ESL. But if I'm not mistaken, it was run by the same people that later on started to run ESL. And so yeah, that's kind of where the sense for competitive gaming was coming from. So I was playing Quake myself within the team for quite a long time in team deathmatch. Then I moved on to one-on-one discipline when Quake 3 Arena was out, and I kind of toured around Germany a bit to earn a bit of pocket money by playing tournaments, needed to sneak in some LAN parties because I was not 18 by that time. And yeah, that's kind of where I got infected by the esports virus. So I remember one of my favorite moments was when we were watching ClanBase Euro Cup with Quake. And where like all the European, there were European teams formed by nationals. So we had a German team, we had a UK team, etc. And we were all sitting there and cheering for the German team and watching it. And it was still a bit more complicated. Like you didn't have anything like Twitch. You can just tune in and then you have the great experience right on your TV screen. But you had to sync Quake TV client and in-game client with the shoutcast audio stream, and yeah, but it was really, really cool. It was a really great experience, and I thought, okay, or we all thought, man, it would be so great if this would become a thing in Europe or the Western world in general at some point, because in the 90s or late 90s, StarCraft already was aired during primetime television in Korea, right? And this, I had a dream that it would be the case in Europe at some point in time. And yeah, we're here now, so I'm quite happy how it turned out to be.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So do you think that with the recent release of the alpha for Quake Champions, that there is still a space in the market for a game like this? You know, a lot of the FPSs and also MOBAs are moving towards more of a kind of 5v5 or 6v6 structure. I'm just not sure whether there is such a massive audience for that kind of 1v1 skill only game these days. What do you think about that?
Well, I would like to see it to be more successful than it actually is right now. And Bethesda itself, they try to push it quite hard. Obviously it doesn't accumulate as many viewers as other disciplines like Overwatch, for example, or Counter-Strike. I would like to see it grow more. I'm not sure if it will throughout the years. I think it's just not as accessible as it is as Counter-Strike, for example, right? So yeah, we will see how it develops. Maybe just give it a bit more time. Let's see how the tournament landscape globally will maybe help this discipline to grow. But yeah, I unfortunately have my doubts that it will be the next big esports hit. I would love for it to be so, but I don't think we're going to see it.
So we've seen quite a few games that have tried to integrate some of the aspects of Quake into the likes of Overwatch and Lawbreakers and a few others. I'm always quite dubious about titles that are trying to revive old ideas and actually being built specifically for esports. I think that should probably come from the community first. Back onto task, you took Spice to Worlds. And you did an absolutely fantastic job in groups, and now you've moved over to FC Schalke. Just break down a little bit more about the journey with Spice going to Worlds and kind of the turnaround that team had over that season, because it seemed to be pretty hard in the first instance. Did you get Spice of the quarterfinals in Worlds?
No. That wasn't us, unfortunately. No, we did. We didn't do so well at Worlds, and I would also not say that I was the one bringing the team to Worlds. I think it was a joint effort. I joined right after the spring split, where Splice almost got relegated, and I shortly joined before the players were coming back to participate in the summer split of LCS, and I started to, or I helped building some structure within the League of Legends team at Splice. And yeah, luckily we went to Worlds, but of course it was also because of all the work that the coach back then, Jakob Mepti, put into the team. So one of my core philosophies is that even though I know a bit about League of Legends, I'm not a high elo player, so I don't get myself involved too much into the sports side of things, right? I won't talk about tactics with the team, I won't talk about drafts, I won't bother the team with my very limited knowledge. That's why we hire people that should have more knowledge and should bring this expertise to the table, and I'm not one of them, right? So my job is more to hire the right people that have this sort of knowledge and make sure that they're able to succeed, rather than myself trying to mingle in my knowledge. And I think that's never good, right? It's like we have so many hobby football coaches in Germany that are just sitting at home eating, drinking a beer and watching football, and then they know everything better about the game. And one thing that I've learned pretty quickly is that pro players really, really hate the so-called Twitter analysts who think they know it all about the game, and then they try to put their opinion into the room. There's so much more to the game and so much more depth to it that it's not my job. And if I can only add half-assed comments, I won't do it. It just doesn't add any value.
So when I was in LA at the start of the year, I got to spend a bit of time with some LCS players from Optic and also some Overwatch League players from the Houston Outlaws. And I've recently made the switch from League to Dota just because I wanted a fresh start, and actually just to kind of try something that had a few more options, maybe escape some toxicity, but that's not really been the case so far recently. But yeah, when I was speaking with LCS players, that I was a Silver One Bard main, I kind of, they just looked at me like I was complete garbage. So.
And that's fine, right? If that's not your role, then sometimes it's just better to not say anything than just adding some opinions, right? And yeah, the transition, or just going back when you asked me how it all started, like between Quake and Splice or League of Legends as a whole, there was there were quite some more stepping stones in between. I when the whole Quake thing didn't work out, or you couldn't earn money with it, right? So the idea to found a multi-gaming clan and then accumulate sponsors and kind of get a revenue stream going, that didn't work with Quake, right? Because Quake was banned in Germany. And if you wanted to do that, as I said, multi-gaming clan, so meaning that you have to take on other disciplines. And I wasn't really interested in that idea back then, right? I wasn't interested in Counter-Strike at all. I wasn't really like it. There was no case back then that could have been made where I would have said, okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'm jumping into this. I'm getting Counter-Strike, Warcraft 3 back then, and Starcraft. So I was more looking for other opportunities. And there was a World of Warcraft guild that got my attention back then. It was called Nihilum and was managed by Mouseports. And it was the by far most... most successful PvE guild in the world, and they had a huge amount of followers. They had a forum as a website, and there was so much activity. And that was during a time where actually website traffic still mattered, right? So you could still monetize quite well off of just normal banner ads. We didn't have the ad block issue that we're or challenge that we're having right now. And I was just thinking, okay, if this is going so well, but it's not really being properly professionalized, why don't you just get in touch with them and ask them what their goals are going into the future? Because you have a huge team with a lot of players, you have a huge community around them, and there's still so much more you can offer the community to take it to the next level, right? Not only from the internet perspective or the internet inventory, but also from how can we engage better with the fans outside of just an internet platform, right? So is there a possibility to get the guys to an event like Gamescom? Is there a possibility to work with Blizzard or other partners and really make sure that those players are present at events, even though there's no tournament landscape for World of Warcraft PvE like there was for Arena, for example, right? And this is where it kind of really started to go more into the business side. I was not playing actively anymore because there was just simply no time for it. And we started to get this idea to the players of Nihilum. We couldn't really reach a consensus with the Mouseports management back then. So we still wanted to get this idea going. And we found an investor from Dubai who helped us with the first steps, and we founded a guild called Insidia, built a portal called Mana Flask around it, where we offered guides, and I quit my job back then because the whole project grew bigger and bigger. I know people were saying, "Tabit, you're crazy, how can you do that? Like, World of Warcraft PvE, no one has done that, and if there would be a business opportunity, then some people would have already done it." And yeah, but I thought, "Oh, no, it's a great opportunity. We have the right people that can make it happen and the right players." So yeah, it just started from there. And later on, it just, the whole WoW PvE thing, when a lot of the old school players quit and the business model wasn't really sustainable because you had to have so many players on your roster for just one team that there was just no way to monetize it properly or just to break even. Unless you wanted to add more games, which again wasn't really what we wanted to do. So I had to look into a different direction, and then I was working with a client who wanted to do a project within League of Legends, and back then I really hated the game. I was playing quite a lot of Dota in my free time, Warcraft 3 Dota, and then I moved on to Dota 2. And League of Legends back then, the graphics and everything, it just, for me, it was just horrible experience to play. But I started to work more with the game as I took over this project, and I started to kind of love the game and was really happy with the progression the game made throughout the years. So at some point I was looking more at the business side of League of Legends, since LCS was, I think, back then in its third or fourth season already. And as time moved on, I decided to look for a manager position at an LCS team, so just to get some insights, to see if I can bring my knowledge to one of the teams and my experience that I had with other players or with other sides of the business before. And yeah, that was FLYS. And the reason why it was FLYS was I was really impressed by Marty back then, because I knew that the org had quite some struggles with the performance of the team. But I always had the feeling when I saw him in interviews, and he was very humble back then, that he has the right motivation and the right drive to keep the project going, or to you could see he has this idea, and he fell really mad in love with this idea, and he has the energy and the passion and the work ethics to make it happen, right? That was my motivation to join Splice. And I know people said, yeah, but why do you take a bottom tier team? Why don't you go to a Fnatic or a G2? And yeah, but for me, the challenge was, like, it's always easy to join something that is already successful, right? Because then you're just doing, you're optimizing processes, or you will never have this feeling that, okay, you're part of the success of the whole thing, or it's just different, right? It's way less challenging, right? Because you have structure in place, there's set rules and set boundaries, and I'm not going to a team for the bragging rights. Like, I don't really care about that.
Sure. So that makes a lot of sense about why you joined Splice, and then onto FC Schalke. FC Schalke's first entry into the space was a bit of a flash in the pan. It seemed like we were kind of rolling things out on a on a bare bones budget. But this year, with all the key hires you've made, with the kind of players that you've brought on, it looks like FC Schalke is really throwing the full weight of the organization behind you guys, which is awesome. Is that what really kind of brought you into kind of moving over and working with a sports team, that kind of challenge and growth opportunity?
Yeah, like, I've talked with Schalke for quite some time. Back then, when we played them with Splice and we beat them, both of the games we played against, I was really sad that they dropped out of LCS. Like, from a sports perspective, it obviously was right, because they just didn't perform as good as the other 9 teams. But from a business perspective, my personal goal is to help further professionalize esports, right? And when you have a sports team like Schalke, and you see them dropping out after only a couple of months from one of the major disciplines in esports, that's obviously a bummer, and that doesn't help me reach that goal, right? So I was a bit sad that happened, and I really wanted to talk to one of the people responsible at Schalke to just know more about, or find out more about their plans, and find out if, like other clubs, they're going to drop out of the discipline immediately, or if they want to give it another chance. And so I met with Tim Reichert at the Gamescom. Happened not too, quite after they dropped out, actually. And we were just having a conversation. And some meetings followed. And after like 1.5 years with Splice, there was Splice thought about going away from Berlin. And I simply wasn't ready for that, right? So there were different reasons for that decision. I really wanted to stay in Berlin. So since Schalke and I, we were talking all the time, every now and then we decided, okay, now it's a good time to make the move and to help Schalke build a really solid structure within their esports environment, and take it to the Spring Split 2018.
Awesome. Well, that's why I'm actually really glad that it's you that's going to be leading this. It was really sad when we saw PSG actually step out from the LCS. That's just bad for business, and that's bad for the PR too. And, you know, with all the investment that has rolled out in North America, with all of the NBA teams and some baseball teams and some other sporting entities actually getting involved, there's a proof in the pudding that this could work, which is why I'm actually so excited to see how the EU LCS franchising rolls out, what sport teams are already interested in, kind of hearing a few rumours around some pretty big names across the Premier League, Bundesliga and La Liga that might be stepping up into the space, or at least just pitching for a slot. But at the same time, what's happening with CSGO, there are kind of a few rumblings around the industry of ways they're actually looking to put a little bit more structure into the global CSGO scene, which I think is awesome, because the players, you know, are abroad for 260 days a year, which is just insane. So if there's any way that we can build up a more structured environment for the players and for the teams, and it can also drive the narrative towards the overall season of CS, and that would be amazing because you know, narrative is everything in entertainment.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add there?
Yeah, I'm also very curious. Like, I really hope we will see more sports clubs coming in for the franchise program, even though, yeah, it's tougher competition for sure. But then again, it will be good for esports if they have the right approach, if they start building the right structures and not only investing into players, but also investing into staff. I think that's really important. And it's, I still have the feeling that it doesn't get the right focus in Europe. So I think some teams still put most of their investments into players, and it's fine that players get a big chunk of the pie. But then at the end of the day, how much sense does it make if you have a roster that is worth a lot of money and you don't invest into the right people to lead that roster or to lead that to take care of that investment? That for me doesn't make much sense, right? And that's also why for me, with the ongoing conversation with Schalke, one of the reasons why it took so long was A, I was happy with Fleiss, and B, I really wanted to find out, okay, if they struggle, if they fail again, like, how serious are they about esports? Are they really serious, and do they really see it as a long-term project apart from FIFA? Because FIFA is always an easy catch, right? It's so easy when you pick up FIFA as a sports club to sell it to your fans, to sell it internally, because it's a sports simulation, right? And I'm not saying that with any negative notion towards FIFA. I think FIFA is a great game, and if we see more development in the whole tournament structure, it's going to be a great game and a great esports title for more years to come, right?
Yeah, so we actually had an episode with Tom Halls from Gfinity a few weeks back, and we spent the entire episode speaking about the state of simulation esports or esport or competitive gaming of the likes of FIFA, Madden, and the NBA 2K League. So yeah, it's just quite exciting to see all that be fleshed out, and I think it could be a self-sufficient ecosystem in its own right. So what's your approach to actually managing talent? What are kind of the philosophical ideas that you put in place to maximize their time in the spotlight?
I think my core philosophy here is just first hiring the right people, right? Because I will not be working with the players every day. Like, I will probably see them every day, or right now I'm with the League of Legends team because I'm responsible for our operations here in Berlin, and we just started our base of operations here, so I need to be here. But for example, I have not a lot of contact with our two wonderful FIFA players. So I need to make sure that we have the right people to help develop the players. So our head coach for League of Legends, for example, he's not only being measured by results, but he's being measured by player developments as well. So is he able to develop the players in the direction we want the player to go, or the player and us agreed on? We want to make sure that for a player really sees more than, as you said, just a split or just a season, to prepare him as good as possible for whatever is to come after that, right? So no matter if this player is going to be playing for Schalke or if he's going to play for another organization. And we start with the very basics, like with how do you eat healthy? What is a healthy lifestyle? What does it actually mean to be a pro player, especially for the more rookie players like Elias Upset, who just had this debut game in the LCS not too long ago. But what does it mean to deal with pressure? What does it mean to deal with fans? Or I want them, if they leave Schalke at some point, whether they retire or whether they will join another team, I want them to look back and to really reflect on that time there and really say, okay, I've learned so much in this club. I've learned so much about the game. I've learned so much about how I could potentially live my life as an esports player or as a professional athlete. And maybe my coaches also helped me with some life situations I had to deal with outside of the game, right? And I don't see our responsibility only to, okay, yeah, we go into a scrim block, then we review the games and we have match day and we go off stage and that's it. I think I see our job as it's definitely a full-time job to take care of the players. Right. And yeah, we go to the gym with them. We're working with a nutritionist from traditional sports that helps our chef, that is a trained chef, cook the right meals for the guys. And we also want to help them build their own brand through content pieces. So yeah, like we try to provide the whole or the full scope of services to the players. And what's also really important for me is that they understand and that also the staff understands who they're working for, right? That it's not just another esports team, but that it's what is Schalke actually, what are the values of Schalke, what does it actually mean to be with Schalke, what is our history, tradition, etc. And so that's why we made a boot camp, for example, and decided not to go to Korea, but made sure that all the players are going to the headquarters of Schalke, see some football games in the arena, really get a feeling and a grasp of the atmosphere. You see the fans chanting at their chanting during a game, and like, yeah, that's really important for us. And else, I think in terms of leadership style, I don't really like to micromanage. Usually when I feel the urge to micromanage someone after this person has been on board for quite a while, I think I made a mistake, because I try to empower the people that work for me, make the right decision after a short period of time and take over responsibilities and ownership, because this is the only way it can work well on the long run. And they also need to understand why this is so important. Like, at the end of the day, I want our team manager, for example, to feel, okay, this is my project, this is my baby, I'm responsible for this, I'm responsible for success and for failure, right? It's not this guy, or it's not my boss, or it's not whoever, but it's me, it's really my thing, my project, right? And if people understand to think like this, then everything will be so much more easier. They will be more creative, finding solutions, and they will just look at it from a different angle and not just see it as a 9-to-5 job that they need to do to get some cash. And right now we're really blessed I'm really blessed that I'm surrounded by people that really have this ownership and this mentality, be it the team manager or be it the strategic coach or the head coach, and it makes my life obviously a lot easier. But I think it's also really good for the players, because then they can work with experienced staff, and they also know whenever there's an issue that we will listen to them, but that we also want them to perform, obviously. Like, we're not really too much interested in results right now, but we're more interested in the way and towards playoffs, the way, like, progression overall. So that every game we play on stage, every game we play in the scrim environment, we want to learn something out of it. And we, of course, also want to teach our players certain discipline, and also make sure that they understand why certain things, even though it might be minor, things are really important and what implication it has for their professional life. And yeah, so like, there's no, I think core philosophy is really hire the right people and really take your time. And there are so many people that really want to work in esports, but then when you see what kind of work you actually have to do, and that esports really knows no working hours, it can be a bit frustrating, or it can be easily overwhelming.
So as an extension of that, one of the other key hires that you brought on was actually Crepo, one of the former casters from EULCS. Without diving into too much detail, what was kind of motivations behind bringing him on board? Like, I know that he played relatively recently when one of the players was ill. Mm-hmm. Dive into why it is that Crepo was a good fit for the team.
So I had the chance to work with him at Splice for a few weeks. And obviously I followed him a bit as a caster, so I already had a good idea on how he would be working when I worked with him at Splice. And what I really liked is with his coaching style is that he combines the knowledge of being an ex-pro player, so he has been in the shoes of the guys. He knows the feeling, like the feeling that you have when you are on stage, when you need to play in front of an audience, but also like when you don't play well, when you don't perform well, how your fan base or how Reddit reacts, for example. So that alone helps a lot, just to for the players to build respect and for him to just go to the players and say, look, I've been in that situation, this is how I solved it, right? And then his knowledge of the game is really, really good, and he is a fantastic coach. So he's not only looking at the game, but he's also looking outside of the game, how he can improve player communication, for example. What is a good way to tell another player that he should have played a situation differently, right? So how do you ramp up the communication in the game? And there's just so many nuances to it that he can teach the players, and the players respect him. So that for me was were some really important reasons to hire him. And I didn't hire him because of his reach or his fan base. Like, I'm not really interested in that. So his decision to stand out of the spotlight, for me, it's really, really fine, because I didn't hire him for that in the first place anyway.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. As I've already mentioned, as a support main in League, there aren't a massive amount of content creators that have like really strong commentary or that you can learn a lot from. So I always used to watch Crepo's stream or whenever he was us in the LCS. You know, there's a lot of the focus in the broadcast around the kind of the DPS and the carry players, but I think a lot of the support players across many esports titles are probably overlooked. As always, we are running up against the clock, like we do for every episode. So I'd just like to take you through one or two rapid-fire questions before I let you go. From my side, for like personal development is a priority for me, and there's always been one or two people that have been catalysts for my own growth over the course of the last few years, either in esports or outside, or you know, just as a human being. So who has been the biggest mentor or source of inspiration for you over the last few years? Is there anyone inside the industry that you've learned a lot from?
Yeah, so from esports, there are a few people I really respect, but I've not had the chance to work with them. When I was a gamer for Quake, obviously there were some players that I really liked, like Fatality, Machiavelli, Thresh, Zero4, Kane, German player. Actually, the brother of Tim Reichert, our CGO. It's pretty funny. I was a huge fan of him back in the days. But for my personal life, I think one of the first bosses I had, Götz Klingenhofer is his name, Klingenhofer, and he was a really good boss. He was really pushy and he was very smart and he just got stuff done. And he never accepted no as an answer, and he moved the small business pretty, pretty quickly. He was always doing fair business. And I was always impressed in the way he handled things and how he solved problems and that he never really settled. And I really liked that. But after that, even though I've worked with a lot of people, but there was never the situation again where I said, oh man, this guy that's absolutely brilliant. And if I work with this guy for the next 3 or 4 years, I will be a better person. I will learn so much. Like, that never really happened. I have a lot of respect for certain people that I've met along the journey. But yeah, like calling it a mentor would be too much. And in terms of books, yeah, like Sir Alex Ferguson, the way he manages professional sports players, I think it's really fascinating, his approach. And yeah, then some investors that I'm Peter Thiel, the story around PayPal, for example. Now we started something when everyone said, but this is just a money thing. And there would be some examples of people I look up to or I'm getting inspired by every now and then. Obviously, you have to take it with a grain of salt, right? Like, It doesn't mean that everything they say, you just take it and, oh yeah, he's so right, yeah. But
I completely agree with you there. You've always got to take advice that you get with a pinch of salt and make it your own. So the final question for you is around having a healthy lifestyle in esports. There are lots of people that are stepping into the space now or have been working in it for a while. There are no working hours in esports, so it's always quite hard to maintain that balance. Do you have any advice for anyone to kind of maintain that healthy work-life balance?
I think the best piece of advice is just fucking do it. It sounds cheesy, but I really mean it. Like, when I remember how I started, with the whole story with Nihilum, right? I only told you, I didn't tell you the whole part. But the way I applied at Nihilum, I just applied as a translator voluntarily and as an editor. And I worked my way up there. There was no payment. There were a lot of hours. I did it all in my free time. And I gained respect from the staff by putting a lot of work into it. And I really loved doing it. And what I'm seeing, I had so many situations where some people were approaching me and telling me, oh, I really want to work in esports. And then I tell them, okay, but if you really want it, if you're really keen on doing it, then just identify what kind of value you could add to an esports team, website, whatever it might be. Then just apply. If you think you're a good writer, a good journalist, then just write a piece about a player, something really in-depth, do some research and then just send it to someone, right? But you need to sit down on your ass and really start working. And else I'm not really interested too much in fancy CVs. I'm really interested in seeing what people are capable of doing. And just if you're proactive and if you're approaching a company with some good pieces of work proactively, I think, there's a good chance that you might be picked up. Yeah. Or just watching esports. I mean, it's super easy to say, yeah, I watch esports and I really love it. I love the space. And yeah, I mean, that's all cool. But that doesn't mean that this might be for you. This might be an industry for you to work in, right? There are so many people who want to work in the gaming industry and they're really illusional about what kind of job it actually is, right? For example, I did my apprenticeship at a company that tests video games, right? And while I was not one of the guys testing the games, I know one of our editors in chief, like, he got questions all the time, like, oh yeah, this must be a dream job, and how is it working in this industry? You get to test all the newest games, and it's amazing, and yeah, it sounds really cool, right? But you also have to test the shitty games and products that are not really as good, and you have to sit down, play them for hours, then write a huge article about it, spend a lot of time on it, and you need to do it every day. It's the same in esports, right? You need to be consistent, and you need to add value somewhere. And if you are able to identify for yourself what this thing is that you have and that you could bring to a team, to a website, or to any other form of projects, then yeah, just go out there, do some work, and apply somewhere proactively.
That's some inspiring stuff there. We have sadly reached the end of our slot for this show, so I just want to say thank you so much for coming on, and I really look forward to seeing you at an event soon. What's the best place for everyone to reach out to you if they want to get in touch on socials or an email?
That's a good question. Like you said in the beginning that I'm trying to stand out of the spotlight, so no. I do have a Twitter account, even though I'm not too active on it. If people tweet at me and ask for contact details, I'm happy to provide them. I think LinkedIn, you can't add me on LinkedIn, really, if you don't know my email address. So I'm trying to, yeah. But no, Twitter is a good idea. So if people just want to have a chat, just reach out to me on Twitter and I will provide details via DM at followlick is my Twitter account.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. And yeah, we will see you on the next one. Hans, it's always a pleasure.
No worries.
All right, guys. And if you want to reach out to us, you can reach us on Twitter at ES Roundtable Pod or on Facebook at Esports Roundtable Podcast. Have a good week and we'll speak to you soon.